So what does this mean? I mean, our minds can't help asking this sort of question. It's difficult for us just to take it in, just absorb it, just to receive it. Our minds start working. What does it all mean? Well, in a sense, of course, it all speaks for itself. Above or beyond or below a rational mind, the sutra does, as it were, get through. It does manage to speak to us. It does produce an effect. It does produce an impression. We receive the meaning, as it were, bypassing the rational mind. But the rational mind also wants some explanation. It wants to know the meaning, even though not much explanation really is required. So I'll give just a few hints, just a few pointers regarding the meaning of it all. To begin with, there is an expansion. Rucharaketu's house expands. So what is the house? The house is everything that belongs to us. It's our personal framework of reference. It's our habitual state of consciousness. That's our house. So this expands. In other words, if we have a problem, or when we have a problem, we cannot solve that problem with our present state of consciousness. Indeed, in a sense, the problem is a product of that state, an expression of that state, even an extension of that state. So there must be an expansion of consciousness beyond the problem. And horizontal expansion is not enough. There must be a vertical expansion as well. In other words, there must be an expansion not only into different states of consciousness, but into higher states of consciousness. The house, therefore, is transformed into burial and becomes adorned with numerous divine jewels. Before, it was made of wood, made of brick, made of stone, and decorated perhaps with plaster work. But now it's made of precious stones. Before, it was opaque, but now it's translucent, or at least semi-translucent. In other words, there's been a transformation from the ordinary waking consciousness to the meditative consciousness. Rucharaketu is in fact now in a state of dhyana. And in Buddhism, as in all spiritual traditions, higher states of consciousness, dhyana or dhyana-like states of consciousness, are associated with light and are symbolized by light. They're also associated with jewels, symbolized by jewels. Jewels are not only bright and shining, they're also colorful, glittering, dazzling, beautiful. And they therefore fitly represent a consciousness that is not only higher than the ordinary, but more fascinating, more attractive, more beautiful, and also more precious, more valuable. Incidentally, while we are on the subject, as it were, we find that ordinary dreams are always in black and white, but big dreams are in vivid color. And in the same way, in the visualization practices that some of us do, great importance is attached not only to the visualization of light, but to the visualization of color. We visualize, for instance, a green Buddha. Not just a Buddha, not just the Buddha. We visualize, for instance, a green Buddha, a vivid, emerald green glowing Buddha, or a red Bodhisattva. And the colors, when we visualize in this way, must be rich and glowing, just like those in a stained glass window through which the sun is streaming, only softer and more diaphanous. Sometimes these colors, these lights and colors of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas that we visualize in this way, in a certain kind of meditation, are compared to the colors of the rainbow, or to sections or fragments of the colors of the rainbow. Now, you'll have noticed that Rucharaketu is sitting inside his expanded house. In other words, He's completely surrounded by the higher state of consciousness. He's completely inside, completely within the higher state of consciousness. And this, of course, reminds us of the Buddha's simile for the fourth jhana state. His simile for the fourth jhana state, most of you, I think, will recollect, is the man who has taken a bath on a hot day and sits completely wrapped in a pure white sheet. That's the symbol, that's the simile rather, or the illustration for the fourth jhana state. And we find much the same sort of symbolism in Tibetan Buddhist iconography. For instance, you have a painting of a deity, painting of a Buddha, painting of a Bodhisattva. And you see that among other things, he sits surrounded by a halo of coloured light. Though you might think, looking at the picture, looking at the painting, looking at the tanka, that this halo of coloured light was a two-dimensional circle, rather like a rainbow. But this is not in fact the case. The halo of coloured light really represents a cross-section of a three-dimensional shell. Let me just give you an example to make this clear. Supposing the halo has three bands of colour. Say there's a band of red, then a band of white, and then a band of blue. So what does this mean? This means that the deity is sitting inside, first of all, a shell of red light. A three-dimensional shell of red light, which surrounds him or her on all sides. And this shell of red light is inside a shell of white light. And this shell of white light is inside a shell of blue light. So if you take a cross-section, what do you get? You get a halo, as it were, a two-dimensional halo, as it were, with these three bands of colour, red, white and blue. But actually what you have is these three shells, one inside the other, of different kinds of coloured light. And sometimes the texts dealing with this subject speak of the deity of sitting inside a series not of shells of coloured light, but of tents. Of tents made of silk of different colours. There may be as many as seven tents and seven colours. The significance, the general significance is the same. So you can see that we come here quite close to Rushura Kato sitting inside his vast and extensive house made of beryl and adorned with numerous divine jewels. Now the transformation of Rushura Kato's house is said to be due to the Tathagata, that is to say due to the Buddha, due to the Buddha's power. And how are we to understand this? It's not simply that the Buddha, the human historical Buddha, has worked a miracle. Of course, on the factual level, on the factual plane, a miracle has taken place. Miracles are always happening in the Mahayana Sutras, as we know. But what is the meaning of the miracle? Don't forget, Rushura Kato is confronted by a problem. That's the starting point. A problem that he was quite unable to solve, the terms of which he was unable to change. At the same time, the problem was extremely painful. So painful that he was quite unable to endure it. So when we're in this sort of situation, as some of us are sometimes, what happens? Assuming that is to say that we are on the spiritual path and that the problem, whatever it is, has arisen out of our efforts to evolve spiritually. What happens is that a new factor comes into operation from a deeper level of our being, or if you like, from a higher level of our being, a level of which we are not conscious, at least not conscious of as ours. And this new factor is represented by the Buddha. After all, we are potentially the Buddha. Rushura Kato is potentially the Buddha. Not, of course, that one should use such expressions at all lightly. But he has reached the end of his conscious resources. He has had to call down, resources of which he is not conscious. So this is what happens. The Buddha, as it were, intervenes. The problem is solved. The problem is resolved by the intervention of a higher factor, a factor which enables Ruchiraketu to rise to a higher level of consciousness. And this factor is something that operates from within the as yet unrealized depths or heights of his own mind, his own being.